I would like to say before I get started, you know, this project that I'm going to talk about, generally when we talk about ARS research, it's very long-term research. I was approached in December of 2007 by Roger Isom to put together a proposal that was kind of a broad sweep proposal to look at some of the dust problems that we have across the country. And I said, sure, Roger, I'll go through and put that proposal together. When do you need it? He said, well, you know, it'd be nice if you could present it at Beltwide. So I had about 2 weeks to put it together, and I think as you'll see as we go through this presentation, the one thing that truly amazes me about this project is how rapidly things happened. Working within a government agency, this is not something that we're typically used to. I would like to recognize my co-leaders, which were Derek Whitelock and Cliff Boykin. Derek's with the New Mexico Gen Lab, and Cliff is with the Mississippi Gen Lab. Without these guys' help, we would not have pulled off what we did. The objectives of this study, they're pretty broad, and it's a massive project. The issues that we have in California, we're looking at things as in terms of what's coming out of the stacks. So we wanted to address that. If you look at Missouri, North Carolina, South Carolina, and other places, we were interested in modeling issues. You know, how much PM would we have at a certain location downwind, things like that. Other things that we needed to know, how do we characterize this dust? What is it truly? You know, what's its true size? What's the particle shape? Things like that. And then on the final objective was something I know Sid's heard quite a bit about and everybody else in the last five or six belt wides, and that is the sampler error issue. We have done a lot of theoretical work, a lot of laboratory work on the sampler error issue, and the things that we kept running up against with EPA and other folks was the lack of field data. Well, I guarantee it, by the time we're done with this project, we will have field data. When we talk about the stack sampling stuff, the stuff that California is truly interested in, we're interested in knowing what's going through the stack, and we use instruments similar to this one here. The reason that we're interested in looking at the PM2.5 stack emissions is right now we just don't have the data. And what the state there is looking at using is a number of roughly 36% of the total dust that's coming out of the stack. And that's the estimates that they're looking at using. Some of the work that we've done, Texas A&M has done, shows that that percentage is truly less than 5%. In fact, the majority of the work shows that it's less than 2%. So that's a tremendous difference, especially when you think about the implications that could come from using a number like 36. There's been things thrown around like instead of using cyclones, we use baghouses. You know, if you want to know what kind of a mess a baghouse is, talk to Roger Isom. I'm sure he could fill you in. Dispersion modeling. When we talk about this, I'm sure you've seen presentations in the past like this, but essentially what we're talking about is taking a gen site and doing modeling, and we do contour plumes that go around the site. What we would like to see is this 150 mark to be within the property line. Very difficult to do. And the reason that it's difficult to do is these models were not originally developed to work on low-level point sources like cotton gins. Some of the work that's been done at Texas A&M and some other places show that these models can overpredict by a factor of 10. What we wanted to do with this project is to get some additional data to help support that, to see if we could get some model corrections in place. PM characteristics. What we're looking at is graphs, something like this, that would show the distribution of the size of particles that we have coming out of the stacks and that we see around the yards. We're also interested in things like this down here at the bottom, particle size or particle shape. The sampler error issues, and I know you guys have seen this quite a bit in the past, but just to give you an idea of what kind of magnitude we're talking about there, these results here are for stack sampling errors. If you look at a small dust like a limestone, very small dust, about 7 microns, much smaller than what you would typically see coming out of a gin, we see that if we look at the PM10, it's going to oversample by 1.2 to 1.3 times what it should be. When we get over to the PM2.5, that oversampling 6 to 7 times. That's a huge difference. If you look at something like a starch product, that's the mass median diameter of that dust is similar to a cotton gin dust, and you can see that those overestimations are huge, especially in the PM2.5. So that's why we really wanted to get our additional field data and pursue the discussions with EPA and the state regulatory agencies. Now, I'm not going to read off this entire list, but I told you this project moved extremely fast, and that's to the efforts of folks like Chris Breedlove, Kelly Green, Tony Williams, Steve Verrett, Harrison Ashley, many other folks that after we had our meeting last year, Ed Barnes, they went to bat, they started writing letters, they came up with funding. Tim Price is another one that I see there in the back. Extraordinary support. Without that support and getting those dollars, we would have never made it out to the field this season. What we did with the support that we got from all these agencies and organizations was we leveraged that with ARS. We were able to go through and lay aside salaries to support scientists, to support our technicians, and et cetera, through the efforts of Ed Hughes, Rick Beiler, Greg Holt, and all of our other leadership there at Lubbock. And the estimated cost of the salaries is roughly $700,000. You get an idea of the magnitude of this project. We also had efforts by Bill Norman led to remove the overhead associated with this project, which was relatively low, but it still helps. You know, that freed up roughly $50,000. We're still working on trying to secure $300,000 to complete this project. We have several things in the work. We've had several meetings at this meeting to try to figure out how to come up with those additional funds. Collaborators. Like I said, Derek and Cliff, without those guys, we wouldn't be where we are today. We have Texas A&M University, Dr. Parnell, Russell McGee. Those guys have played an important role. All the gin associations, Texas, California, Southern, Southeastern, National, all have been very supportive and very helpful in putting this project together. Cotton Incorporated. And then, of course, that next one, huge, especially when we get out to the field. You know, our first sampling site was at Mesa Farmers. Without Alberto's help, his board's support, the gin crew, we wouldn't have been able to pull this off. The support that those guys showed us was tremendous. We have regulatory agencies that are involved, which is kind of an odd deal. You know, we've got the California Air Resources Board, the San Joaquin Air District. We've got EPA folks, national folks, and regional folks. So we've got a lot of people that are on our advisory committees and so forth that are kind of, we're bringing them all to the table. That way, whenever we get the data set in the end, hopefully we don't have a whole lot of questions about the methodology that was used and the numbers that we come up. Everybody's on board from day one. Our sampling plan. Our plan was to do one gin in the fall of 2008 at Mesa Farmers, looking at doing one gin in South Texas in 2009, and then two gins in California. I will tell you, when you start looking at sampling times of 12 to 20 days on site, I got to wonder if I'm still going to be married next summer, next fall. It is a very aggressive schedule. I think we can pull it off. Our team really pulled together after the 2008 at Mesa Farmers. We got things moving very efficiently. Sampling time, we're looking at roughly 12 to 15 days to do the stack sampling, and we're also looking at around 15 to 20 days on the ambient sampling. We're gonna do those at the same time. Lab analysis, I mean, I've got the numbers down there. It's going to take us a tremendous amount of time to get the filters through the lab. This is an enormous amount of data that we're looking at doing. Now to get to the fun part, the pictures. This is at Mesa Farmers. What we did in order to speed up our stack sampling was we put extensions on every one of the stacks that we were going to test prior to testing. That way we didn't have to mess with the crane or anything during the project. Here's a picture over here. Showing them putting on one of the extensions. This is the extensions and all the pre-cleaning side. We also had the lint cleaning side on the other side. This is a picture showing some of the stack sampling. We were running two man lifts. We were sampling two systems at one time. This little bitty trailer down here, this 44-foot cargo trailer, it went from our massive storage to two laboratories inside. The front side of that, and I think I got a few pictures, will be the console room, and then the back side is our filter and wash retrieval area. Up here you can see Cliff, you know, he's trying to get his head straight to go back up. We're changing the head out on the sampling probe. We got pretty efficient at the end. We got to where we were able to turn around these runs in about 10 minutes, which is pretty fast. When we're doing the stack sampling, one thing that's dragging this out a little bit is we're looking at three different methodologies from each one of those stacks. So each one of those stacks, we have about an hour and a half run per rep. We're running three different methods, and we do three reps. So you've got we spend quite a bit of time on one stack. This sampler head, if I can get my mouse to work, right here, is what we call a method 17, or it gives us a total particulate. And what you have back here is a filter. Each one of these will have a filter at the very back. That's where all your final dust is captured. This cyclone right here is a PM10 cyclone. What that thing is supposed to do is to remove all the particles greater than 10 microns, so it only allows the stuff less than 10 to get back here to that filter. This right here is the PM2.5 sampling probe. It has a PM10 cyclone followed by a PM2.5. Here's a picture of our sampling console room that we converted the trailer into. With us running two stacks at one time, we've got one man that monitors both consoles and keeps things rolling. It's kind of difficult to see, but this is the inside of a PM2.5 cyclone, and you can see a film of dust that's around there. After we retrieve those from the field, we take those and do an acetone wash and retrieve all that dust, and that's part of our analysis. The ambient sampling. Ambient sampling, I know this looks like a bullseye or a dartboard, but when we went through and we set this up, part of our design was to make it very unique, something that we could go from location to location and have the same type of plan. We've worked for nearly 5 years on putting together a mobile unit at the Lubbock Lab, which is probably the best equipped air quality lab in the country, at least that I know of. What these things represent, what we wanted was an array. So you'll see three circles. We have an inner circle, a middle circle, and an outer circle. And they're all separated by about 300 feet. On this inner circle, what we have is what we call standalone units, or samplers that are standing about 2 meters tall. What we have on this inner ring, and I'll show you pictures of this in a minute, are tower samplers. And they have some other things there. Outer ring, again, are standalone units. Typically, what we would have at each one of those dots would have been generators in order to power those samplers. Well, if we were to sit around and try to fill up 36 generators all day long, that's all we would be doing. So what we tried to do was think of a way that we could go through and reduce the number of generators that we would have on site. And that was done by laying electrical lines. We went through and laid about 8,000 feet of electrical lines in order to power a lot of these or bring the power back to a central point. Any of the lines that got on the gin yard, we buried about 5 to 6 inches deep. We ended up with only needing 11 generators out there to run all of our sampling points, which totaled up to be 119. When we talk about a tower, this is what we're talking about. It's a 10-meter tower. Oh, wait a minute. It's a 10-meter tower. And it's got a TSP sampler on one side, and it's got an anemometer on the other side. And we had two sites that were fairly busy. They would have a brown box like what you see over here on the side. That's called a T-ohm sampler. And then we would have two ambient PM2.5 samplers, and we would have two PM10 samplers. This was an EPA requirement. This was to give them an estimate of the precision of the measurements that we were taking. So we had two sites like that. We had two other sites that were quite similar to the other one, except we only had one PM2.5 and one PM10. We had eight other sites to where you would have a tower and then a PM10 and a PM2.5 sampler. And then we had 24 of these standalone samplers like what you see here. This is really a unique picture because this captures a lot of things here. It's got the standalone sampler. You see one of the towers in the background. Right over here on this side is a radio tower. All of our samplers that were out there talk to one another, and it reports the data back to the trailer. And then, of course, over here on the right-hand side, you can see us testing the battery condenser. Ambient setup, as you can imagine, that trailer that we had, even though whenever we got it brand new, and you know, I was thinking, how in the world am I going to fill that thing up? You know, the question got to be at the very end. I think Cliff asked me, he goes, how in the world are you going to get all this stuff back in there? It's a tremendous amount of equipment. Here's just some pictures of the setup. Here's some of the sampler heads, the ambient sampler heads. This is a PM2.5 sampler. The top part of this is the PM10. The team, I can't say enough about the team. We had the majority of the staff out from the Las Cruces lab out there to help us set up at, you know, several times throughout this entire deal. It was amazing that morale stood up as long as it did out there. You know, we had folks there on the last day after being there for 20-plus days that were still smiling, so I felt pretty good about that. One of these characters took this picture here in the middle, and he started making comments about how many PhD Aggies does it take to change the airflow on a battery condenser. So, and if Dr. Parnell was in the room, if you can't see this, yes, we are working on calculators for whatever reason. So, here's just another picture of the team. Without these guys, we would have never got everything set up. Murphy's Law. I'm going to run through this really quick, just to let you know that we feel your pain during the gin season when you have problems. Yes, that is hydraulic fluid. Yes, this is the second day of the setup. Run into things like this. You know, the right tool for the right thing. Yes, that is a 10-pound sledge putting in a quarter-inch bolt into a PVC pipe. This is a $60,000 piece of equipment here. What you always like to see is the duct tape, baling wire, and the foam spray setting on top, along with the coke and a few other things. This is just one of those things that you run into in the field. We had a leak in there, and they spent half a day trying to find it. It ended up being up here in this mess, you know, just one of those frustrating things. You know, whenever we went to the Mesa Farmers Gin, I heard, yeah, the air's going to, you know, we're going to have wind blowing the right direction. It's going to be beautiful weather. You know, it's not going to be in West Texas. You know, in West Texas, there's lots of dust storms. Nah, we won't have any of that. I think we had 5 dust storms. This is just one of them. This the picture right here was taken, and then this one was taken about 5 seconds later. We pulled everybody, we called and made the call to get everybody down on the stacks, and as you can tell, we couldn't see them before they got down. Here's a little picture, and this is hard to see, but these little white streaks that's going down through there, that would be hell. Dust storms, what we don't want to see, this is inside of an ambient PM10 sampler. During a dust storm, that thing fills up very rapidly. There is probably this much sand in that impactor head. Things you don't want to see. Other things you don't want to see is when you pull apart the stack sampling, you don't want to see a half bale of cotton sitting on the filter. And we got to talking about this, and I think this is just an anomaly of the season. I think a lot of folks in West Texas had very dirty seasons, and we saw that at Mesa. Another thing you don't want to see a guy when we're supposed to be running, working on electronic boards in the trailer. You don't want to see the guy that's supposed to be running the show trying to get rid of software bugs. This picture we took out there, this is one of the mornings. The way we got this system running was Derek and I would get up about 5:30. We would be out there at the gin. We'd start taking down all the ambient filters, and that way we could start our stack sampling around 7 a.m. I don't know how many of you guys know Derek, but we had radios every morning, and we're driving around on these man lifts taking these things out, and I hear this call coming across. You know, it's real quiet in the morning. Derek goes, you know, this is just such a beautiful sunrise, but this is day 12. This is insane. You know, nobody should be up this early. And with that, I'll finish up. If anybody's got any questions, come find me afterwards, or Kelly, or Roger, or Tim. We do appreciate all the support that we've received from all of you guys in pulling this thing off.